From Whitehall to Williamsport, Huntington to York, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, with the mainstream media captive of political correctness and the woke culture, many are turning to new media for real news and substantial public policy discussions. One such new media is Broad and Liberty. We'll talk with Terry Tracy and Albert Eisenberg. The Pennsylvania state system of higher education is in deep financial trouble. Dr. Jake Hauk is here with an Allegheny Institute report on how the colleges got into financial distress. And Governor Tom Wolf's shutdown policies are driving businesses from Pennsylvania and hurting the economic recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this week's commentary. I'm Loman Henry. Happy New Year, and welcome to the 26th year of Lincoln Radio Journal. Broad and Liberty is a new website focusing on news and information, primarily in Philadelphia and southeastern Pennsylvania, but expanding statewide. Here with a look at what Broad and Liberty has to offer are Terry Tracy, co-founder of the site, and digital director Albert Eisenberg. Gentlemen, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Gentlemen, before we get into a discussion of specific issues, Broad and Liberty, a fairly new digital publication, tell us a bit about the website. What was the impetus for founding it, and what is your focus?
We like to talk about Broad and Liberty as the Philadelphia region's intersection between current local issues and public policymaking and the eternal struggle for the cause of liberty. Practically speaking, we're a Philadelphia-based nonprofit media enterprise and public policy think tank that's committed to offering diverse, innovative, and disruptive viewpoints about issues, ideas, and policies that hit closest to home to our readers. I think what this means in terms of, and I'll let Albert touch on balancing the broader media landscape, but this sort of unique joint venture of different initiatives is really intended to create an accountability framework for local government that is largely non-existent due to the erosion of local media outlets and this sort of broad embrace of urban woke politics that has really infiltrated the remaining newsrooms and media landscape in places like the city of Philadelphia, and we are there to challenge that status quo.
Journalists like to talk about themselves as speaking truth to power, but the reality that most people with more than a couple brain cells can observe at this point is that if that power is coming from one side, most of the media is quiet. So Terry, myself, and some other co-founders in late 2019 had sort of identified a few major trends happening in media and politics. One of them was the decline of local media and sort of the nationalization of everything. And local politics and local issues and regional issues are really, and statewide, are what affects people more than, you know, whatever Trump tweeted. So we recognize that as a trend in need of addressing. And we also recognize this sort of woke journalism trend and the fact that the existing journalistic outlets really only cater to a very small niche of people within Philadelphia and within Pennsylvania and the region as a whole. And that is sort of an elite, progressive, upper-class group of media consumers. And we wanted to create a media outlet that actually meets people where they are in reality. And that is what Broad and Liberty is.
What sort of challenges did you face, are you facing? First of all, it's a startup, so starting up is always a challenge. But particularly, it's all digital. How do you reach out and build an audience? And also, talk a little bit about the content of your website.
Well, it's interesting because as I reflect upon the last year, and I think about the things that inspired us to take on this project, what we knew going into this, as Albert mentioned, is that there was a massive market opportunity, right? That there were vast swaths of the population that were just sort of intellectually abandoned by political and institutional media. And so we knew going into this that there was going to be an opportunity to connect with people who felt left out, and also, frankly, to change hearts and minds just by virtue of providing reason and balance to the dialogue in the area. We also knew that we would face the inevitable sort of denigration that is inherent to anyone that challenges that which is fashionable in our woke political dynamics today. But I think what we obviously did not prepare for as a startup organization is doing this in the midst of a global pandemic and a massive economic contraction, right? We rely on the goodwill of others, donations. We're a 501c3, we're a nonprofit organization, for support. And as the world started to unravel at the beginning of 2020, I'll be honest with you, Loman, there were many nights over the course of many months that I laid awake at night just wondering when we would succumb to forces that were more powerful than us, especially because we were already venturing on an effort to speak truth to power, right? So it's been a challenging year, but I think that what's remarkable is that we are where we are because of the quality of the content we produce and the market opportunity that Albert just spoke to. And frankly, we're in a position now where we are having, every day we're talking about capacity building because we are having a hard time keeping up with the demand for the content that we're offering.
Speaking of the content that you're offering, and we'll come back to this a couple times during the show here, where can folks go to read Broad and Liberty?
So they can go to broadandliberty, that's all spelled out, .com. And like Terry said, we're a 501c3 nonprofit, so that's where they can go to read and share and donate. And they can go to @broadandliberty on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And the listeners here, like Terry said, we are trying to build up some intellectual capital and really try something new and create content, like I said, that meets people where they are in reality. So we could use a follow, we could use a like, we could use a share. And then on the website, people can join our email list.
We are talking with Terry Tracy and Albert Eisenberg, and they are with Broad and Liberty, a new, relatively new digital publication. Right now, you are based predominantly in Philadelphia. That's where most of your content is focusing. But you're looking perhaps to expand this statewide across Pennsylvania?
That's right. I mean, we always viewed this as problem, as not unique to Philadelphia, right? So while Philadelphia is where we live and what we know and where we've started, it's been really important to us that we build an operating model that is leverageable and scalable, because the issues that we are facing here with respect to advocating for political, economic, and cultural freedom translates to Pittsburgh, Harrisburg, Erie, Reading, Scranton, the city of Chester, and frankly, cities all over the country.
There are some issues that are relatively unique to the city, at least statewide in Pennsylvania, one of which, gentlemen, we have witnessed some, shall we say, civil unrest, they like to call it, a nice way of saying rioting. You recently penned an editorial, Looting and Lockdowns. Tell us a little bit about your approach to the problem that we're having.
One of our goals with Broad and Liberty is to connect what is happening in Philadelphia to a larger civic discussion of what is happening in the country, what's happening in the state. And, you know, the idea that lootings and lockdowns are the new cost of doing business in Philadelphia, we had not only significant and more concerted over a longer period of time amount of lockdowns at the time we wrote that might be the November surprise. And indeed, there were more Republican votes out of Philadelphia than there have been in a generation. So we're covering this and we're responding to a couple things. One is the actual facts on the ground, which is if the new cost of doing business in Philadelphia is getting your store looted every 5 months and having arbitrary lockdowns whenever the government decides, and there is no district attorney response or law enforcement response for the people doing it, which basically gives carte blanche to people to go out and loot, then at some point business is going to dry up and businesses cannot just absorb this. And when we say business, we always mean the jobs that supports, the economics activity that supports, the families that supports. And, you know, we're the only outlet right now that's willing to say that out loud. And that's kind of, that's the problem we identified. And that's why we produce this type of content.
Loman, here's an interesting anecdote to just provide some context to what Albert was just talking about. As far as we can tell, there has not been a single prosecution of a single crime associated with the looting and riots in the city of Philadelphia now dating back to October. However, if you were to open your restaurant for, say, a private party that was met all of the state and CDC requirements for social distancing and mitigating the transmission of COVID-19, you would be fined heavily, likely prosecuted, and your business would be pushed probably beyond the tipping point of being able to reopen. Southeastern Pennsylvania is, what, roughly a third of the state's GDP? And the impact well beyond the city's borders and into the collar counties, both politically and economically, is significant. And so the implications associated with this kind of nonsense go well beyond the borders of the city of Philadelphia. And I think for those living in smaller urban areas around the state, they already know that it's coming to a town near you very soon. And that is the clarion call for our mission, right? And why we're doing what we're doing.
All of these issues you can find discussed in depth at Broad and Liberty. We have been talking with Albert Eisenberg and Terry Tracy of Broad and Liberty. Gentlemen, once again, please remind our audience where they can go on the web to read this publication.
You can go to broadandliberty.com. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And you can join our email list on our website.
Albert Eisenberg, Terry Tracy, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Loman.
The Pennsylvania state system of higher education enters 2021 facing financial difficulties, declining enrollment, and likely consolidation. Dr. Jake Houck is president emeritus of the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy in Pittsburgh. He is here to talk about a new policy brief on the system. Jake, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Jake, when we talk about the Pennsylvania state system of higher education, what exactly are we discussing?
We're discussing a group that was formed by the state back in the 70s, I believe, that became 14 universities that were formerly what they call normal schools or schools of education that were converted to university status and made part of a large system that's called the Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education. It's really 14 universities loosely connected with one central board of governors, but with their own individual university trustees.
And a significant amount of funding for these universities comes from taxpayer dollars, correct?
A major source of funding comes from the taxpayers, so $400 million, I believe, last year. They also get some federal money and some other individual, I guess, grant funding. The properties themselves are owned by the state. The universities do not own the properties because they really were converted schools the state had created earlier. So it's a little unique in that these schools, their assets are listed. Their capital assets include their grounds and buildings, but those buildings and grounds are typically owned by the state, and they can't dispose of them without state permission.
The system now is having a significant amount of financial difficulties, partially driven, Jake, by the fact that enrollment is down. How badly has enrollment dropped at these schools?
Well, overall, the 14 system total loss since 2010 is 21%. But that covers a wide range of losses. Cheney, for example, is down over 50%. Edinburgh is down over 40%. I believe Lock Haven is down about 40%. And other schools, most of them are in the range of 20 to 40%, with a few under 20. Millersville, for example, Slippery Rock, pretty much holding their own, for example. But Westchester actually grew over the period by 30%. So it's sort of an outlier. Has done very well during the period in terms of gaining students.
Now, the financial picture at these schools collectively, in your brief that has been published by the Allegheny Institute, you're reporting that their balance is off by about $1.6 billion with a B. What are the causes of a financial picture that bad at these universities?
Two things. You mentioned the enrollment. A big decline in enrollment means a lot of loss in tuition and other student revenues that have not been necessarily made up by state funding. The other problem is the people who determine how you do your bookkeeping have required them to put on their balance sheet all these massive liabilities that they have, unfunded liabilities for pension benefits and other post-employment benefits, which have swollen massively over the past decade. So they're now down, as you pointed out, their net negative position is $1.6 billion. That is, their liabilities exceed their assets by that much. And unless something dramatic happens, it's likely to get worse because the pension benefits keep growing and their revenues do not keep growing.
What role are the faculty unions playing in driving this deficit, Jake? The unions usually, it doesn't matter what the economic circumstances are, they generally feel that they're immune to that, which of course they aren't. So are unions part of the problem here?
Well, yes. I mean, the unions, of course, their contracts require the annual increases in pay that they bargain for, regardless of what the situation with the financial ability of the university to pay. Plus, it's very hard to get rid of them. Getting rid of a union member is very difficult. And when they get rid of a union member, they have to do it by seniority. So the old people with the higher pay get to keep their jobs, and the newer people with the lower pay would be the ones that would go. Plus the increase in pension benefits, the other benefits besides pensions, the health care, vacations, and other post-employment benefits, all contribute to enormous costs that the union has been able to. The union, it covers all 14 sets of faculty in the system, and it's just a management nightmare to have to cope with this. There's no flexibility. It is so bad, for example, that if a department wants to hire a faculty member, that faculty member cannot be employed unless every current member of the faculty approves it.
Not many businesses operate that way.
You can't operate that way. A lot of the management prerogatives have been taken away by the union. You know, they had a strike a few years back, which is almost unheard of for a university system to have strikes. Penn State and Pitt, for example, do not have faculty unions. You have a tenure system. The faculty union for university faculties is an egregious thing for Pennsylvania to ever permit it. I mean, it's like treating them like public schools. Even the public school unions are a disaster for the state. But to have them in universities is really bad.
Now, last year, Jake, in July, the legislature was taking a look at this problem. They passed some legislation. One of the proposed solutions here is a bit of a consolidation of these universities. Can you talk a bit about what sort of consolidation plans are afoot?
Well, originally there was going to be three consolidations of two universities each to have a total of six that would be blended down to three. But later on, that was changed because one of the universities that was going to be involved was Slippery Rock, and evidently Slippery Rock didn't want to be part of the merging with Edinburgh, which was planned. And then the Lockhaven-Mansfield merger acquired Bloomsburg. For some reason, Bloomsburg is going to be involved now. So they're planning two mergers with three universities each, Edinburgh, California, and Clarion. Bloomsburg, Lockhaven, and Mansfield is the other one. So they're going to merge six universities down to two.
Taking a look then at the performance of these universities, there are rankings as to which schools in Pennsylvania do the best, and they have a whole set of metrics, including their graduates finding jobs, et cetera. As we look at the schools in the state system of higher education, Jake, are they performing well relative to other schools in Pennsylvania, or are they lagging behind?
Let's just put it this way. Most of them are lagging well behind. Of the 123 universities that and schools of higher education that are ranked by a group called College Factual, Westchester is the best at 33. Now, the University of Pennsylvania is number one. Haverford and those private schools are ranked pretty high. Carnegie Mellon, I believe, is third or fourth. Penn State is 13, but most of the schools in the system are ranked 70 or worse. Slippery Rock, I think, is 55, but all the schools in the merger group, none of them ranks as high as higher than 66, which I believe is Bloomsburg. So they're out of 123. So to say they're not performing well in comparison to other schools is an understatement, at least most of them. Could be one of the reasons that we've had such losses at places like Edinburgh and Lock Haven. I mean, 40% loss in 10 years is a dramatic change in your enrollment, and it has implications. I mean, it drives your, because they didn't lay any faculty off, the cost per student has just skyrocketed. And they have some of the highest costs per student in the state.
So higher costs, not performing well, all sorts of problems abound at the Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education. You can read all about it at the Allegheny Institute's website. We are talking with Dr. Jake Houck, who is President Emeritus of the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy. They're, of course, based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Jake, where can folks go on the web if they would like to read your recent policy brief on this issue?
They can go to AlleghenyInstitute.org, and when they get to the menu page, just look up policy briefs and go to the one entitled Considerations for Hashi Consolidation.
AlleghenyInstitute.org. Dr. Jake Houck. Jake, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure, Lomb, at any time.
The economic recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic is going to be difficult, and Governor Tom Wolf's continued business closure orders and restrictions are making matters worse. So says Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Remember the old saying, when the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail? Well, for Governor Tom Wolf, whose family fortune springs from a cabinet-making business founded by a 19th-century ancestor, the carpenter analogy is particularly apt, for it perfectly encapsulates Pennsylvania's response to the COVID-19 pandemic under his direction. 8 months ago, in April, we talked about the ramifications for indiscriminate shutdowns. We said, rather than blanket shutdowns, the government should allow businesses to continue to adapt and innovate to produce the goods and services that Americans need while continuing to do everything they can to protect public health. Well, once again, in the name of stopping the spread of the coronavirus, Wolf has instituted a partial lockdown of our economy and is calling on the federal government to bail out the Commonwealth and other states whose governors have issued similar decrees. Indeed, in his address on December 10th announcing the new lockdown, the governor called on Washington on three separate occasions. Then, just a couple of days later, Wolf joined New Jersey Governor Murphy in a 30-minute press conference calling on Washington to bail out Pennsylvania and New Jersey. The hammer meets the nail method of problem solving also accurately describes PA's approach to improving its business climate under Wolf and his predecessors over the past several decades. Under governors, and to be fair, legislatures of both parties, the Commonwealth's political leaders have relied on providing generous taxpayer-funded incentives to favored businesses and industries as their preferred method of generating economic growth, rather than focusing on improving the climate for all businesses by reducing the state's tax and regulatory burden. The results have been lackluster, with Pennsylvania consistently lagging behind its closest competitor states in job, population, and income growth. And now, with Wolf's lockdown-first pandemic response, PA businesses have yet another reason to question why they continue to do business in this Commonwealth, as evidenced by some of the findings of the Lincoln Institute's Fall 2020 Keystone Business Climate Survey. For instance, 67% of respondents believe that PA's economy is on the wrong track, compared to just 26% of respondents who believe it's on the right track. 73% of respondents believe that the pace of the Wolf administration's reopening of our economy has been too slow, while just 25% believe the pace has been too fast or just right. Keep in mind that these questions were asked prior to the latest round of lockdown orders, and that businesses have continued to leave Pennsylvania for states with more hospitable climates. In February, Glafelter, a manufacturer and supplier of paper and non-woven material from Governor Wolf's home county of York, with nearly $1 billion in annual revenue, announced it would move dozens of jobs to Charlotte, North Carolina. No local economic development incentives were offered. And just this month, Auntie Anne's, the pretzel maker synonymous with Central PA for over three decades, announced that it would move its headquarters from Lancaster to Atlanta, Georgia. These examples are just the latest in a decades-long trend of Pennsylvania businesses fleeing the Commonwealth for more hospitable locations. And the impact is not only felt in the loss of jobs and income to the state, but also in the amount of tax revenue flowing to the Commonwealth's coffers, which will only make the task of balancing our 2021-22 budget even harder, coming off the heels of the stopgap spending plan for the 2020-2021 budget that was cobbled together barely 1 month ago. If Pennsylvania is ever going to recover from the COVID-19 pandemic and overcome the business climate problems that predated the pandemic, its leaders are going to need a toolbox that contains more than one tool. The Commonwealth needs to put away the hammer and try a set of tools that can create lasting economic growth. Tax and regulatory reform are fantastic places to begin. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity. To find us on Facebook, search at PAAFP, and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 26 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WBHV-AM in Somerset, WXMT-FM in Smithport, along with WOWY-FM in State College, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.